I have done just a little bit drinking in Abilene. Just a little bit. Back in the fruit jar days. That was back in the days when the old Grace Hotel over by the railroad track was the leading hotel, and it was when Lindbergh was flying the Atlantic. I had an old boy over there. We shared a big corner room in the Grace Hotel. That was when I was doing my practice work. And he would get drunk and horrible shit. I didn't know what was the matter with him. We'd have to tie him to that old brass bed. I could shut my eyes and see it. Spread eagle him. Ankles and wrists. He'd go absolutely nuts. Good guy, too, you know it. Most alcoholics are good guys and good gals. We found a program here, a lot of us, quite by accident, if we choose to look at it that way. I don't. I've got to believe that higher power of ours steered each and every one of us at the time he selected for us to cross trails with AA. I don't think there's any element of accident attached to it at all. I've heard so often people in AA say, "I wish I had known about it 10 years ago." Well, I just can't feel that way about it. I'm thankful I found it just when I did, and just how I found it, because I believe that was the time my higher power selected for me to find it. Since that time over in the Grace Hotel, I've learned considerable about an alcoholic. I learned the hard way about the lonesomeness attached to their lives, the abject humiliation of coming halfway to and realizing what we've done to our families and to our friends and to our associates. It's a horrible awakening. We've got tonight a wonderful guy, a wonderful speaker, a physician, an alcoholic. He's seen both sides of it, and I know he's going to give you a wonderful story. And after his message, there will be a very brief intermission, and then a big surprise, so everybody stay hitched. And I'd like right now to introduce you to Dr. Jim from Kerrville. Thank you, Ole. Well, Ole was up here bragging about one of his drunken episodes in which he didn't black out. He remembered the name of the hotel and how the guy looked. There are some of us, that, including myself, that we do remember a few episodes, but many of them are blank. Very interesting here what he said about the civilian, the mayor pro tem. My wife, Marge, and I were standing at the elevator on the mezzanine here, and two or three people came out of the elevator, and a man followed them, and he looked at the sign Les Ross has out there on the alcoholic program. He saw the word alcohol, and he ran back and started batting against the door of the elevator a while ago. Said, "I'm on the wrong floor." Now that is certainly the way that I could see myself. I could see Dr. Jim many times in that position. The word alcoholism or anything pertaining to alcohol or drugs or the disease or illness caused by them or pertaining to these things used to frighten me to death. It reminds me very much of one time a woman came to my office when I was practicing medicine, and she brought along pots and pans and a few pieces of bread and said that her husband had been trying to poison her. So she kept on talking very rapidly, and I finally got a word in edgewise, and I said, have you ever seen a psychiatrist? She said, yes. And he just told me I was schizophrenic, paranoid type, and who wouldn't be with somebody trying to poison him all the time? Well, that's Dr. Jim in the old days. I'm Jim Roundtree, a doctor of medicine and an alcoholic, former user of all drugs of all types. And through the grace of God, using Alcoholic Anonymous as a instrument, I have had no alcohol and no medicine since May the 29th, 1957. Now, that isn't long, and of course we only count one day at a time. But because I believe in the philosophy of AA, despite the fact that probably half of the people here have heard my story, also because I believe in trying to follow the example set by us, by the great teacher, Jesus Christ, and in how he was able to put himself on his fellow man's level. He didn't sit up as a priest on an altar or sit at a high place and tell people why and how they thought and what it was due to. He didn't act as a superior intellect. He didn't quote the Sanskrit completely. He did at times. But he didn't base his teaching of his philosophy of Christianity. He did not base it upon scientific knowledge, whether it be theological science or whether it be medical science. He based it upon being an example, being one of the other people. He put himself on our level as a human. Thus, that great philosophy from which the tenets of AA come has spread all over the world and has influenced the world more than any other philosophy that has ever been taught by any person. So I feel that when AA tells us that to tell our story, that for us to put ourselves on each other's level and disregard the artificiality of degrees or of any other honor one might have, then I think that that is what we should do. I was born in East Texas. I got my Bachelor of Science degree from Southern Methodist and my Doctor of Medicine from Baylor Medical. I got my MD when I was 22. I had wonderful training. I had a year at Methodist Hospital in Dallas and 4 years in Baltimore at one of the greatest hospitals in the world as the last 2 years I was an instructor in surgery. I was in the service. I was a lieutenant colonel at the end of the war. I was shot out in the North Sea. I spent some time in off Zuider Zee in a dinghy with shell fragment in my back. I didn't have to go on that mission, but alcoholically I volunteered, disdaining the basic tenets of the U.S. Army Air Force at that time. I came back out. I went to Corpus. Some of you here knew me there. I did general and neurosurgery. When I was in the service, I received an honorary fellow in the Royal Society of England. I came back to Texas after the war and did general and neurosurgery at Corpus for not quite 5 years. I made between $75,000 to $100,000 a year. And then I started using a harmless drug. I started using the drug Demerol, which was publicized as being non-addictive, non-habit-forming in all the medical brochures and in even the Reader's Digest. Having about 3 or 4 degrees, I didn't quite believe the medical journals, but I took the Reader's Digest as my Bible and started using Demerol for those fearful shakes. Of course, a person with my great intellect and extreme sensitiveness, especially those next morning, he was entitled to use something to keep him down on a level with other people. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Demerol is a great leveler, combined with whiskey especially. I level myself down. I had to leave Corpus. I started going then 50 to hospitals. I made 42 hospitals in 6 years. I made Fort Worth. I had a great deal of trouble, but eventually became allergic to Demerol. That was the grace of God, I think, because it is not explainable by science. Oh, they can put a term on it. They call it that I developed a psychological allergy, which means nothing. It just means I couldn't take it anymore. But it was something that I wanted to do and had done, but I became unable to do it. I had reactions very similar. If any of you have had a drink of whiskey after an abuse, you know what Demerol did to me at that time. So I quit against my will. I decided then that I should try just whiskey fortified with Nimbitols and Benzedrine. I used to drink socially in the bars at 9:30 a.m. They opened at 9. I wasn't one of these hurry-up drinkers. By noon, I was a little borracho, a little drunk, and needed something to soak me up, so I would get some. I was a high cotton type of person. Being a doctor, I could get the ampules of Benzedrine, and I could shoot that in my vein. And that would sober you up. Of course, it nearly blows the top of your head off, too. I took the Benzedrine in the vein, and that made me so nervous I couldn't hold my highball glass, so I'd take one or two Nimbitols. Later, as my research program on myself developed, I bought the Nimbitol in solution in ampules and could give that along with the Benzedrine intravenously. But at any rate, during the 6 years that I made 42 hospitals, I went to Johns Hopkins, I went to Mayo's, I went to Town Hospital in New York, I went to London to see Anna Freud's place. I went to the best in the world. I went to Menninger Clinic. Dr. Carl Menninger wrote my mother a letter in 55 stating that he doubted if I would ever go 3 months without alcohol or dope or some sort of medication. But at any rate, I tried to find someone who would cure me. I joined churches. I joined I don't know how many churches. I used to think if my church, I happened to be an Episcopalian born one, but I happened to think if that wouldn't work, well, maybe the one of these Holy Rollers would work, or one of these faith healers. And I got tied up down below West Dallas Bridge, with a gentleman that would furnish me whiskey if I'd testify as an M.D. And I did. In fact, I can tell you the name of the lady who owns probably as many apartments, she and her husband, as anyone in Dallas. She rescued, she got my medical bag out of pot because I was drinking ahead of schedule, and when my friends got me to leave, he wouldn't let me take my medical bag with me. He said I owed him that much in liquor I'd consumed ahead of time. But at any rate, I continued getting in all sorts of trouble, jails, hospitals, both free and paid. And some 5 years or so ago, my license was revoked. I'd had it suspended 3 or 4 times, touch and go type thing. And finally they gave up and said, we revoke your license. I went on a binge to try to drink and die. I'm sure that many of you here have set out, loaded your car up, or loaded your pocketbook up and said, well, I know this is horrible, I know that it's stupid, but at least I'm gonna be big and I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna stay drunk till I'm dead and I don't want anybody to know where I am. I'm sure that many people here have done that very thing. So I did. Well, I got a job for a few days at a state hospital because the superintendent was a friend of mine, but I couldn't last there. Finally, I decided that I wanted to go to Big Spring State Hospital. I drove to Big Springs, or I had somebody drive me part of the way, most of the way. And then I phoned Les R. Les came over, and I was in this motel. I weighed 140 pounds. I weigh 210 now. I hope my wife don't raise an eyebrow. But I was sick. I was using Nimbitols, and I was using Dexedrine, and I was drinking coffee and drinking whiskey, and I was sick. I could talk fairly well even when I couldn't walk. But I decided that I wasn't quite ready, and Les said, call me when you get ready, and left, which I think was a wonderful thing. I had previously been spoiled. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars were spent for me, but I know that over 200,000, because I know I had receipts for that, were spent on me trying to get me cured. As I stated, I joined these churches and I went to these doctors and these psychologists and psychiatrists because I wanted somebody to cure me. I even went to AA. I started going to a few meetings 10, 11 years ago. But I expected AA to cure me. Of course, nobody ever cures anybody else except God. And then the person has to open the door for his hand to help, in my opinion. No antibiotic kills germs completely. The body tissues do. We can sew up a wound in surgery with sutures, but we don't make the fibrous tissue, the scar tissue, knit the wound together. If we depended upon the surgeon's skill and the science of this world, every operation would be gaped open today. As I told a group of people a while back that I don't know how many thousands of people I've pronounced dead. I've been an MD 25 years. I delivered a lot of babies. I still do.
I don't know how many people that I've seen born, how many I've seen die, but there have been hundreds and hundreds of them. And I know no more of life and death today than any three-year-old child. So please don't be misled by any scientific hokum, whether it be written in book form or announced by some professional mental therapist. Now, I'm not degrading people that try to help. I'm not degrading the efforts that ministers receive when they take their theological training in psychology. I'm not degrading my own profession because, God help them, they saved my life. But let's not worship them. Let's realize that the only things that are simple in life and that are worthwhile in life are simple things. That many times terminology is nothing but a word that's used to cover up ignorance of a situation or a condition. Let us remember what we have been taught over 2,000 years and even before that, that we should put ourselves on another person's level and be simple in our efforts. Let us not try to awe anyone. And I find that is difficult for me. Actually, I feel that we have been given God has given us a wonderful opportunity because He has given us a cross or a thorn which gave us some degree of humility. Without humility, there's no ability to teach. Oh yes, you can sway people emotionally. But if you look back upon your experience and remember the times that you have been swayed emotionally by a powerful orator or perhaps even a minister, if you will look back, remember how many times has that change persisted? In my opinion, the good things come slow to us. They come as a result of our effort. To continue, though, after being, finally, I wanted to get in Big Springs, and then I had to go to a private hospital to get in shape to go to a state mental hospital. Les laughing at me over here. He was the counselor that came to see me there. Then they didn't want me. This is true. The superintendent said that they knew of me and my reputation, and they didn't want any part of me as a patient in the state insane cell. And that's pretty well, that's what I call my bottom. To be refused admission to a state insane asylum, I think, is enough bottom for me. Now, when that happened, well, through the good offices of Les and of AA's wonderful friend, Raleigh Chambers, who is now dead, a doctor, a retired general, used to be head of the state mental hospital system. But God bless him, he was a wonderful friend to AA, and we ought to cherish our wonderful friends. He arranged, and the good Dr. Harrison, who also is a good friend of AA, took me in. Well, no alcoholic ward for Dr. Jim. No. You know, a while back I was talking to an old boy that was on morphine. The only reason I never got on opiates is because I couldn't take it. I tried 100 times. Tried it everywhere in the world. Tried to eat it, put it under my tongue, shoot it in the veins, shoot it in my bottom. Never could get addicted to morphine. Very unfortunate. But I tried. However, they didn't want me on any alcoholic ward. In fact, they wouldn't promise I'd ever get on there. Old Les, I said, Les, well, how about it? Will I get on the alcoholic ward? He said, I don't know where they're going to put you. I think he did tell, too. Well, I went to the maximum security ward, Big Springs State Hospital. I went up there. Myself and 52 or 54 other people, I don't believe any of them knew their names. Some of them would come up behind you and hit you side of the face, knock you down when you weren't watching. But that didn't bother me at first, because at first I couldn't go to sleep. They gave me 1,400 milligrams of Thorazine one day, and that's about 10 times, or about, I'd say, six, quite a bit more than normal dose. Normal dose is 50 to 100, four times a day, I mean. But then they tried other things. They decided to give me shock treatment. Well, then I started to tell you about the guy on morphine. He was afraid they were going to put him, they were going to keep him over 10 days, and he was afraid he wouldn't get to go in the alcoholic ward. Well, of course, I was afraid too, and I didn't blame being afraid, but I was in a situation that I would have done anything to try to get well when I finally got in. But when I got in, they couldn't do anything with me, and they gave me 42 shock treatments. They gave me two a day for a while. I was in an iron bar cage, about 10 by 14 feet, or maybe 20 feet. I think 40-something days, I don't remember. And I was on the maximum security ward for 4.5 or 5 months. They would not let me, even when they stopped shock treatment, go down on the other ward. Now, I wasn't antisocial. I didn't cause anyone the trouble. But just because of my history, which wasn't good. Now, right there, when I was on that maximum security ward, the brief period I'd had in Austin previously, in AA, and a few trips to the Corpus and Dallas AA Club, very few, had taught me something that God let me remember even before I remembered my mother's address. She lived there since 1922, same place. I remembered that I had a chance for a rebirth. That if I had any hopes, it was to start all over again and drop all past habits and associations as well as possible. And I actually thought of these things before I could remember my mother's address. I decided that I would do something every day that I didn't want to do. I mopped the floors despite the fact that they told me they didn't want me to do it or it wasn't necessary. I got undressed in the shower with these 50-something completely insane people and scrubbed them. Most of whom couldn't wash themselves, many of them did. I did these things because I needed to do something I didn't want to do. I requested 2 months before I left the hospital that I not be given any tranquilizers, that I be given no medicine. I requested, so told the doctor. When I went in, they were told to treat me as if I were any other patient, not as if I were Dr. Roundtree. That saved my life. I don't have to tell out loud my appreciation of Big Spring. I love Big Spring State Hospital. I love our state hospital system. Saved my life. I love my medical profession. They saved my life. But, of course, the greatest organization in the world is AA. I bar none. I have belonged to many societies, honorary and scientific. And I am a good member, I believe. I try to be of my church. But there's nothing in the world, in my opinion, like Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I got out of there, and when I got released 6 months or so, my brother came and got me. He's a doctor, M.D., took me to my mother's home. When I got there, they told me they didn't want me to do anything for 6 months or a year. Well, I knew that I couldn't exist without any self-esteem, so I caught a bus and went back to Austin where I'd messed up. The story there is that I decided that I needed self-respect. I was an MD who had no license and had no money, and I had a loving mother and brother and family, but I had to do it myself. So I first got a job selling photograph coupons. I had never sold any photograph coupons or sold anything else. I hadn't done anything but practice medicine surgery since I was 16, go to school. But I got a job in Austin and sold photograph coupons for a month or two. I know the first day I sold enough to pay the next day's expenses, and I phoned up and told my brother he didn't need to send me any more money, that I was now self-sustaining. I'd made $7.50. The first $7.50 I'd made without a life practice medicine in my life, or since I'd been out of school. Well, I did that for several months and got so I was selling pretty well. I made $18 to $40 in an hour or two after I found out I could get the fraternity houses to take part of my commission and sell the plumbing. Then I got a job. I decided I needed a job outdoors because I wanted to learn how to sleep without pills. So Cecil and some of the others here know that I went to many places. I think I went to 14 or 15 places and was refused. Finally, I went to see Mac Collins, a contractor. I didn't have anyone phone him for me. Cecil offered to, and I said, no, let me go tell him. I told him the same as I told the rest, that I'm a deep rock doctor, formerly addicted to drugs and alcoholic, and I want to start again, and I want a job giving me enough to live on. Well, the rest of them had told me they were afraid my hands would get hurt or something, and no. Well, Mike Collins is a little shanty Irishman, and he says, how much would it take you to live on? I think he was testing me out. And I thought a minute, and I said, about 40 a week. So he said, well, I'll give you a job as a laborer, construction laborer. Well, there's some here who knew me when I was a construction laborer 3 years or so ago. I worked 8 hours. Sometimes the sun was 104. I climbed ladders with 100-pound bags of cement on my back. I built scaffolds and mixed cement. And there are probably 15 or 20 people who knew me then, and they will tell you that never was I had any remorse, never did I have self-pity. I always had faith and hope. I went to an AA club every day for a year and a half, and I made 3 or 4 meetings a week for a year and a half then. Now, what was I after? Or what had I learned? I learned one thing, that what I needed in life, and the only thing I needed in life, was sobriety and stability and patience. If I didn't take a drink or a pill today, if I gave my employer an honest day's work for my pay, and if I were patient, thereby fulfilling the third step of AA, turning my life and will over to God as I understand Him, He would take care of my license. He would take care of restoration of my material life. And I believe that then firmly, never doubting for a moment. And it has been given me today, and I still never doubt it. My wife can tell you that I never worry. When I was doing this labor, people said, Jim, some guy, I guess he'd been a psychiatrist, a psychologist, something. He said, Jim, aren't you being masochistic? Aren't you trying to punish yourself? I said, well, I eat well, I sleep well, and I'm optimistic about the future, and if that's masochism, more people should try. Yes. What is peace of mind? Peace of mind is trust and patience. That's all. Living one day at a time, trusting in God, making an effort yourself, and being patient. Now, we need many cliches in our minds. I used many of them myself. When I didn't like anyone, I used to say, God bless them, God bless them. I went back to try to get my license restored, and the Texas Board of Medical Examiners said no. They know all about this. I've written my autobiography. The Texas Board of Medical Examiners requested me to write my autobiography, and they wrote a beautiful foreword for it. A beautiful foreword. They said it testified to the power of God. Now, that's for 11 MDs and DOs on the Texas State Board of Medical Examiners. Now, I said those SOBs when they didn't give me a license back. And then I realized, I said, well, I've been going to AA meetings, and I've been asking God to make me humble, make me patient. And here I don't get Jim's way, and I'm cussing and being resentful. How more can I deviate from the Alcoholic Anonymous program? So I started saying, God bless the Texas Board of Medical Examiners. Now, I wanted to hit them in the head of the brick, but I figured that God would excuse my being a hypocrite if I were trying to build myself into the type of person He wanted me to be. And do you know, after some 30 miles of persistently saying, God bless the Texas Board of Medical Examiners, I lost all resentment. I even began to become grateful for being denied restoration of my license. Because I said, by being denied restoration of my license, God has given me another chance for more patience and more humility and more trust. Now, how often have we cussed the very thing we prayed for? If you're like me, you've cussed many times if you didn't get your way. If you were humbled, if you were slapped down financially. Yet we're going against what we asked for in this program. So after saying God bless them a while, I did lose resentment. I began to think constructively instead of trying to destroy myself. I went back. And then I got a job back in medicine and got my license restored. It was a very fine thing happened to me about a month or so ago. I had a letter from one of the members of the Texas Board of Medical Examiners who had taken my license away. And he had also been grateful when I got it back. And he said my term as a member of the Texas Board of Medical Examiners expires in another month. Would you please write Governor Daniels and recommend me for reappointment to this medical board? Well, I did. And I don't know Governor Daniels. I know some people near him. But I wrote and said that he was a Christian man, that he had always acted fairly, that he was tolerant, and he had humility, and I felt he would make a continuing good member of the Board of Medical Examiners. And I got a letter from the governor saying he had been reappointed, and he thanked me for my recommendation. Now, that's not Jim. That is because I don't know him. But that's this higher power. Now tonight, the reason I have told this story is, as I say, that circumstances can never defeat anyone here. We can defeat ourselves. We had a man talked at our club, Nick, about a year ago who served 16 years in San Quentin for murder. This man was a cousin of one of our AA women, Carol. 8 years ago, he came out and started drinking, and in 6 months or so, he joined AA. 7.5 years sober now, he is now a member of the Advisory Crime Commission, State of California. Circumstances do not defeat any person. We defeat ourselves. I am so grateful and proud to be a member of this organization. I never hesitate to tell anyone. I talked to our high school in Kerrville, a town of 10,000, told them this story about myself, just like I'm telling you. In the last year and the year before, both, I have no fear of guilt. When anybody says, well, you sure were a rotten character, I said, yes, but over here, I have 4 years of effort and patience, and I have sobriety and stability, and I've done a good job at my work, and God willing, I'll do it again tomorrow. God bless all of you, and I'm happy to be asked to be here.